You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Back here on Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Gibbs, Gribbs, and the Glue. Matt Wilhelm with you till 3 o'clock today. To the phones we go. We'll hear from Mel Kiper and Todd McShay coming up in just a few moments, but want to get Steve in Brunswick in, who's been waiting patiently. Steve, welcome to CBD.
Hey, guys. Just about the draft, you know, I guess if the Browns aren't set on a guy at quarterback, I don't think it's a bad thing if you can trade back, but obviously there has to be a partner to trade back with, and that's always the, problem with everybody says you should trade back. There has to be somebody willing to trade back with you and give you something because you're moving back, so you're going to want something. So I don't think it's a bad idea because they, need so many players. And I wanted to ask kind of a general question of Matt and Gribbs there on about this, you're in rumors of Oakland maybe moving to Vegas. So I guess maybe on, both of your side's perspective, is that really I know they've not wanted it for a long time and resisted it, but, I mean, to me it doesn't seem like that bad of a thing. I know Vegas, what it's known for, I guess the gambling aspect, but as far as the, entertainment aspect, we know the legendary Dallas and Atlanta entertainment. So you guys really think it's bad for the league?
I'll speak first and foremost from a player perspective that I think it would be a nightmare to have a team reside in Los Angeles and have that be your home. Las Vegas. Because that, as it sets right now for the 32 other teams, it's the escape. It's where you go to have fun. That's what you know Vegas to be, and then all of a sudden you call it home. And I think you look at the Floyd Mayweathers of the world that live there, and their ability in between fights, which is their off season, going into clubs, doing those things, and what they're exposed to. I think it's hard enough on athletes already to live there. And I said this to, how do you go to UNLV? as a football player or a basketball player.
Just as a college
kid. And to know that the strip, I see the strip out of my, my dorm room. And to not get, it's just the temptation would be an all-time high between, prostitution and drugs and gambling and, the money and the clubs and the influences. I just think would not be good for an NFL team.
No.
As a player.
But maybe if you live there, though, is it different? Like, is if you grew up in Miami Beach and you want to go to where it's snowing for
a
vacation.
It is different.
I had a buddy that lived off of the Strip that lived there for like 3-4 years. Relocated.
Speak to Billy Wynn
company.
About this.
And yeah. And he even said, he goes, like, you go into Buffalo Wild Wings, like, off the Strip. You go into bars and they all have casino games.
Yes.
Like, it's all, everywhere you go, you're always gambling.
My concern with Vegas, with nothing to do with the gambling, is how much of a local fan base will you get there?
That was my next thing.
It might be a great place for people visiting to go, but are you going to drum up some real homegrown support for that team? And I don't even know if that's your goal, if the NFL doesn't even care about that, but I would think that would be a concern because it's just not a massive city in terms of people that just live there.
Right,
all the time.
And is it going to have that Super Bowl-ish type of feel for the 8 home games where it's going to be, not so much from the corporate side, but it's going to be this superficial visiting fan base, went and saw the Las Vegas Raiders play the so-and-sos, and then you'll never go see another game again.
And I don't know if the NFL already seems to have a couple of teams now where it's a stadium full of transplants.
Correct.
Rooting for the visiting team. You'd probably get another
San
one.
San Diego?
Yeah, and I think this new Los Angeles team, until they really establish some roots,
right,
there's a lot of transplants that live in Los Angeles that are going to be cheering on.
Absolutely.
The visiting team. So I think you're in a position now where the NFL already has a couple of those teams. I think that's why there's a lot of reluctance with the Las Vegas movie.
Well, I think Las Vegas, too, it's more so than anything else, it's the gambling. And I think that's why the NBA, Major League Baseball, they had the NBA All-Star Game there a few years ago, and the debacles that came as a result from that weekend. And I just think the gambling thing is such a big, teams don't want to be associated, the leagues don't want to be, even though you have DraftKings and, fan duels and you have all those things out there that someone's making money off of. I don't know who, but the teams and the leagues don't want to be associated with things like that.
The Oakland Raiders lost Barrett Robbins to Mexico during the
yes.
Super Bowl week in San Diego. What's going to happen in Las Vegas on a nightly basis?
I want to know what was going through the mind when that went down. Yeah, exactly.
Usually, usually 3 days is too long for me in Vegas. I couldn't imagine just 3 years.
That's what I mean. Yeah. And again, to your point, I mean, you're going to live in Henderson, which is, you know, 20 minutes, 25 minutes off the strip. But when you have visitors in town, they're not going to want to be 25 minutes off the strip. They're going to go to the strip. Or when you have... And I think it's just the culture of today's NFL, and we, you know, the news that we heard from Trent Richardson. It's easy to get lazy. The people that come out of the woodwork with their hands open, and you're living in Las Vegas. Hey, give me 10 grand because I'm going to go to the strip while you get your sleep in your hyperbaric chamber preparing for your football game. I don't think it's good from a player standpoint because it's hard enough as is. And I think John Harbaugh brought that point up about. The organization, the franchise, and the city with which it resides is the safe dwelling for the players, and they should spend more time there. And why he doesn't is not so much in favor of the long off season to allow these guys to go back to their roots, to go back to and have the free time with money in their pockets to do what they want to do. Unfortunately, you know, we lost the young man on a dirt bike because of it.
We will get to more of your phone calls and tweets coming up in just a few moments, but we did want to get to Mel Kiper and Todd McShay. Now that the Browns have RG3, what are the best draft options for this football team? Specific ESPN podcast talking about this with Todd McShay and Mel Kiper. Wanted to get their thoughts, and then we'll get your reaction as well.
The Cleveland Browns.
Again, another team where the central question is at the position of quarterback. That said, we got the curveball when RG3 landed in Cleveland last week. The thought, though, however, is that doesn't diminish the need at all for quarterback. The question, Todd, and you can kick it off, is whether it diminishes the need for quarterback at number two. What do you think?
I think you're the Cleveland Browns, and you've had more quarterback starters than any other franchise since you returned to the NFL in 1999. You keep swinging and missing, but you have to keep swinging. And I get it, RG3, it's a good fit in their mind, and maybe it will work out. And it seems like Hugh Jackson and RG3 really hit it off, and that's great. And if the worst-case scenario that can happen, if you wind up with RG3 and Carson Wentz, let's say, and both of them are exactly what you think they are in the evaluation process, that you develop RG3 back into the player he was as a rookie, you get him comfortable with the system, he regains his confidence, and he becomes the leader you want him to be. And then you bring in Wentz, and he's every bit, you know, what you thought he was going to be. Maybe needs a year to get going, but by that second year, he's really taking off, and he looks great in training camp and in some preseason games. Worst case scenario, this organization that has struggled seemingly forever, almost my entire adult life, to find a quarterback, has two. And one of which, by the way, had a concussion and a knee injury in college and has had injuries throughout his pro career. So at some point in time, it's highly likely that RG3 is going to get injured again. I think if you have a grade that's anywhere close to this range, high first round on one of these quarterbacks, you pull the trigger and you try to develop both of them and you figure it out as you go. But taking Joey Bosa or Ronnie Stanley here, is that going to change your organization and turn things around finally? I just don't see how it does.
What do you think, Mel?
You know, I have said all along, you got to take the quarterback. And I think this whole bridge, what Todd talked about, this bridge to your next quarterback, which is what you would expect Robert Griffin III to be, is not automatic. I mean, you think about what, you know, Russell Wilson was supposed to be, a developmental quarterback, brought in, you know, Matt Flynn to be the bridge to get to Russell Wilson, a third-round pick. And that bridge, as we said Saturday with Dari and I, collapsed. And all of a sudden, Russell Wilson's the guy, Matt Flynn, not the guy. You caught lightning in a bottle. Now here you're not expecting to catch lightning in a bottle. You're expecting with a second pick to get a guy who is a consensus franchise quarterback. Russell Wilson, there were mixed opinions. He was 5'10 and 3/4. You didn't know how good he would be. We talked about 40 times for wide receivers and that cutoff point. Well, under 5'11 for a quarterback. How many have been great? So far, Russell Wilson has been Hall of Fame-like, which is catching lightning in a bottle. Here you take Wentz, you take Goff, you got a division with three excellent quarterbacks, or Hugh Jackson could say, hey, I remember Andy Dalton being a second-round pick, early two. I remember Drew Brees being an early two, and Derek Carr being an early two, and Kaepernick being an early two. And I'll wait and get Paxton Lynch or Connor Cook. If he feels like they're better value in the second than a quarterback is at two, you could use that philosophy and say, hey, I can learn from history in the past and work, make it work here and take somebody else at two. So I don't care how you slice it. RG3 is not the guy you're going to be confident moving forward with. As Todd said, the injury issue is big. Whether he can even play in a traditional NFL offense is an unknown. So you got to take the quarterback, whether it be at two or early in the second round.
So there's two guys that, well, know they're drafting, to say the least. And they say the Browns should still go quarterback despite the fact that we have RG3. What say you? 216-578-0850. Tweet at us at Browns_daily. Gribbs, your thoughts after listening to that?
I agree with them. That's why I think 60%, 70% of the people out there, I would think, are still supporting quarterback. But I think As the week has gone on, pro days come up, suddenly you start hearing a fan consensus about a guy like Jalen Ramsey. And then you start hearing, oh, what about Joey Bosa? Guys who are familiar names, but they're not quarterback kind of names. But with the way the language has been about Robert Griffin III and how he's been guaranteed nothing, a very team-friendly contract, a quarterback still makes a whole lot of sense at number two.
It does to me as well. I am still of the mindset that if the meeting of the minds spit out their reports and it comes back that there's doubt that either Goff or Wentz can be your franchise quarterback, that you draft a quarterback, but I don't essentially know if you go with one of those guys at number two if you don't believe he can be.
100% got to be believing in.
Yeah, I got to have I know that a Mariota, I got to have a Winston, I got to have a guy like that at two. I just feel because your opportunity to get back to number two again is hopefully not anytime soon.
Amen to that. We'll get your thoughts, Jim in Akron, Joe in Las Vegas. All that and more when Cleveland Browns Daily continues on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Back here with you on Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Gribbs, Gibbs, and the Glue. Matt Wilhelm, back to the phones we go on this free-for-all Friday. We go to Jim in Akron now. Jim, you're on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
What's up, man?
I don't want anybody to jump off the 480 bridge with my scenario yesterday, but I'm thinking if we could maybe draft the best player available, maybe trade down a little bit and get something extra. But the quarterback that intrigues me is going into the college season, everybody was really high on Paxton Lynch. A lot like they were high on Bridgewater, and Bridgewater kind of slipped. Now, maybe we can get a steal with Paxton Lynch in the second round. Maybe trade down a little bit. Maybe get a Zeke Elliott. And maybe we can, you know, find a receiver, you know, with one of those other second-round picks if we do trade down a spot or two. What do you think?
Gribbs, we'll start with you, my friend.
He has a different memory than I do about Paxton Lynch. I thought he was a guy that emerged this season kind of out of nowhere with how Memphis had this great season. And I think the reason why his projection is not as high as these other guys is because he's raw. And he's been raw going into for years now because of his lack of experience, not just at the college level, but at the high school level as well. Wasn't asked to do a whole lot at the high school level. So I think the reason why he's projected where he is he's a work in progress. And he's someone that's probably, I would say, 75% chance he's available at number 32 if you're going to wait that long, just because I'm skeptical on – I'm not convinced anyone beyond the Browns are locks to take quarterbacks at this point. And I'll even say that with about the 49ers. If they figure out a way between now and the draft to work things out with Colin Kaepernick, they've got other needs to fill in the first round as well. I just don't see any other slam dunk quarterbacks are going to this team in the first round beyond the Browns after number two.
Yeah, I agree with you on the – developmental side of Paxton Lynch because of the pistol, shotgun, limited reads, and I believe too Paxton Lynch, not a name that I knew until Memphis was probably 5-0, maybe 6-0 in this season. Did I really follow? And it was, I mean, I was listening to the Hooley show. And Hooley talked to, you know, he didn't even know his name. He's like, this Lynch kid, Paxton, Jackson, you know, and he didn't even know his name. And I was like, I go, who is this? And I had to Google him to find out. I go, 6'5", 235-plus pounds. I go, huh, or whatever, 6'6", whatever the heck he is. And I go, that's very interesting. Out of Memphis, I didn't even know Memphis had football. And all of a sudden, they got a guy that could get drafted and, you know, playing great at quarterback. So I believe you draft Paxton Lynch, RG3, Josh McCown's your starter.
Yeah,
that's the competition, not with this young fella.
Correct. Some of the mocks I've seen him go to a team like the Denver Broncos at 31 or so, and he would be someone I don't think they're putting in right away on a Super Bowl
like a Garoppolo
defense.
But there are those that continue to say at the end of the day, Paxton Lynch has a higher upside and higher potential than Goff or Wentz.
I've heard that as well.
You keep hearing those people that say, if this guy has the right situation to develop, he's going to be better than both those guys. And it goes back to with Paxton Lynch, if you draft him in the first round, is it need, best available, or are you willing to sit on a guy for a year like Jalen Smith? I mean, I don't think you could put him in the same thing because he's a quarterback and he's healthy, but he's going to have time to develop. And he's not going to be able to be a guy, not even if you're 5 or 6 games in and things aren't going the way you want it to go, you can't put this guy in. He's not going to be ready in year one.
Yeah, I think even though Wentz is still treated like someone you want to learn and develop, he's closer than Lynch is at this point. But, again, that's what makes Lynch an intriguing guy. And he's lumped in with some quarterbacks who are almost the opposite of him. Like we talk about Connor Cook is about as seasoned as it gets in terms of his experience and kind of his makeup. And he's also in that late first, early second round area as well. Two very different quarterbacks that are potentially around if the Browns pass on one at number two.
We were just talking about an NFL team in Vegas and the prospects of that. We go to Las Vegas right now. Joe is in Vegas. Joe, you're on Cleveland Browns Daily.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
I've
been a Browns fan since the early days back in the Mistake by the Lake. And been trying to call on your show for years, and kind of glad that I actually get an opportunity to chime in on this one. Lived in Vegas now for 20 years. The first thing I'd like to address is you guys mentioned about gaming out here being an issue. Pretty much any city, anywhere around the world you see, especially here in the United States, I mean, how many casinos are there in California and how many professional sports teams do they have? And then,
well,
you know, you mentioned about the nightlife scenario too. You're telling me there's not a nightlife in Cleveland, there's not a nightlife in any of these other major cities, and the fact that the Raiders, I think, would be the optimal team to move to Vegas since there is a strong fan base here of Raiders, and of course most people here are transplants anyway, but you could actually build a team like that with the youth that are here in this city and don't really have a team to call their own. So yeah, maybe the first few years of a brand new stadium being built, they might not be able to fill it, but I think they could build for a solid future here in Vegas.
Joe,
and we just got the new T-Mobile Arena built, so, I mean, it would be in a state-of-the-art, brand-new, you know, a lot of money put into a stadium that was built here, so I don't see why a franchise wouldn't want to come to Vegas.
Joe, I know the one holdup, and again, I mentioned it earlier, with teams and even with leagues hesitant to build there or bring a team there, and I'm not saying there's not – I mean, there's casinos everywhere. There's a casino – within walking distance of the arenas and ballparks downtown here. It's the sports betting. Sports betting is allowed and legal in Vegas. Not many other places is sports books, sports betting allowed anywhere else in the country. And that's the holdup, I think, with most leagues and most teams in moving.
And that's a valid point. You know, but I think we're getting to the point where, you know, we're recognizing with FanDuel and DraftKings, what is legalized, what isn't. I just think it's a different generation now. I think, you know, especially here in Vegas, I just know that we'd be thriving and wanting a team here, whether it be basketball. I mean, it's the same issue of bringing a baseball team here versus a football. I just think football would do really well here, shortened season. You could build an enclosed dome. And, you know, people who are choosing to come to Vegas and they look, okay, am I going to go this weekend? Am I going to, well, let me look at the football schedule and see if there's a home game there. And get to go visit that stadium. So I just think a football team would do really well here. And you bring up valid points, but I think some of the points that I bring up, especially with being able to build that franchise through youth, I think is something that we're not really – we're so obsessed with looking at the gaming. It's, you know, it's virtually everywhere anymore.
Yeah, Joe, thanks for the phone call, and have a good weekend.
Yeah, I pulled up a story that's been written about this recently just to kind of get more information. Just, well, first off, there's a line in there that says the NFL has had a hard line against Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And that's it's something that would have to involve the NFL really changing its mind on, which we don't know if that ever happens very fast. And the second thing is, too, with Las Vegas, I said, oh, it's a smaller town when you take out all the tourism. It wouldn't be the smallest in the NFL in terms of media market size, but it would be the fifth smallest if it came in. The only ones that are smaller media market-wise are Jacksonville, New Orleans, Buffalo, and Green Bay. And I think Green Bay and Buffalo, those are two unique places that are football-hungry areas that have always
yes.
had teams like that. But would the NFL want to expand somewhere that would make it the fifth smallest media market in the league? I think that's something that would also be considered.
Let's go to Rick in Westlake now. Rick, you're on Cleveland Browns Daily.
Okay, thank you very much. Question I have for you is, what do you guys think our first pick, number two, is worth in future draft picks? My point is that next year, I'm guessing the Browns aren't going to be that great anyway, and so their normal pick is going to be a pretty high pick. And if analytics, if I have it correctly assessed, it would favor trading down. So if they trade down or actually trade out the first pick they have, would they be further ahead in all those future picks? I'd appreciate your thoughts.
All right, thanks, Rick. I appreciate it, man.
The market was set a few years ago at the Redskins and Rams, and that was the number two pick was worth three number one picks. And that included that current year's number one pick. And then I think there was a fourth rounder in there as
correct.
Well. But that I think was a trade that most teams wouldn't have done.
That's a Ricky Williams.
That was a lot to give up.
Correct.
So I don't think you can go in if you're going to trade them. You can't expect that in return if you're just straight up giving it up. But it would certainly I would think you'd start at the bargaining at two number one picks for the number two pick.
And I don't believe personally that there is a player that you have to have at number two. And there's a reason why, and it's for the same reason that, as you said, the Titans are most likely not going to be able to move number one. That's just my personal perspective is it's a matter of taste. Do you draft by need? Do you draft by best player available? And the philosophy that you create within your organization, because if you drafted by need and potentially best player available, the Tennessee Titans could either go Jalen Ramsey or Laremy Tunsil. That flat out. Then you look at the Cleveland Browns, if you draft by need, you know, you could go many different directions. You could go pass rusher. You know, you can go franchise quarterback.
Wide receiver.
You can go wide receiver, but there's not that guy
correct
in this draft to go wide receiver. So I just think that's why if I made a move, I'd want to gather another pick this year. Because we know we're going to have almost double digits next year again to give me another playmaker right now that I can get on the field and be a part of the Hugh Jackson build.
Yeah, and you look back at the last couple drafts, I think since 2012 there's been two drafts where there's a player that people are going to consider moving up to number one for. 2012 obviously was Andrew Luck or even a Robert Griffin III at number two. And then you probably look at last year's draft. Yep. I would say if Tampa Bay had any interest in shopping that, which I don't think they did because they really liked Jameis Winston, they could have gotten some offers because you had two really good quarterbacks at the top of the draft. But then you look at 2013, no one was trading up to number one to get Eric Fisher.
Nope.
No one, in 2014, there was enough question marks around Clowney where no one was really probably going to trade up to get Clowney. So it all depends on the year, and I just don't see this as a year where people are trading up to number one.
All right, break time for us. When we come back, it is a tradition unlike any other. The Friday Forecast is up next on ESPN 850 WKNR.
There ain't no secrets anymore. My name's been hanging on.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Back here on Cleveland Browns Daily, almost to the weekend here.
Can't come soon enough.
Will Helm was ready at about 1:02
and,
today.
And actually, after the, I mean, the holiday has been good to have a break, to have the, you know, the kids home and enjoy some time with them. But you know what? And again, simply because I came back and talked about two Saturdays ago our win in flag football, I'm pumped to get back. You know, over there, the Force Academy over there on in Rocky River.
Sure.
To get my kids together. We've been practicing. I've got my playbook.
What's our game look like for tomorrow?
It's Giants-Bears. We are the Giants. We play the Bears.
How good are the Bears? What's the scouting report?
That I don't do any scouting because the coaching and the players that make up the Giants are that good. And again, I put – so and this is – so I had to play a game – with our kids, we'll get to the Friday forecast. I had to play a game with some of the plays that I drew up from fall football, which, you know, we went undefeated. And, you know, and I had to see what they were capable of. And I was blown away by some of the kids and how talented they are, along with my son. And I went out and created an entirely new sheet. So I went from 12 plays to 25 plays for second graders. I've got the Tebow jump pass, okay, in for a two-point conversion. Hopefully the Bears aren't listening. I've got the fly sweep, I've got throwback. I mean, I've got a backside screen a la Norv Turner.
Is this flag football? Is it?
This is flag.
Okay. You guys run in the hurry up with the play cards on the side, like Gus Malzahn at Auburn.
No, I go as fast as I can. So I have the play cards are for me. Yeah. You know, more, I don't have like
the tote boards with the symbols on.
Say I want a picture.
we're running the leprechaun. I was gonna hand out play sheets. And my wife told me not to. She's like, because these kids are yours right now, and then they're going to play for some, most likely play for someone else next year or next session.
Yep.
And I go, they're going to take those to their coach and go, this is what they run when we play them, or, hey, coach, here's ideas of what we should be running. So I keep it to myself. But what I do, so I have my play cards. They're more so for me, and I'm going to go, boom, okay, we're going to run the reverse. We're going to run this pass. We're going to run this. And then I whiteboard everything. I literally have a whiteboard, and I go, boom, you're the side snapper, you're the guard, you line up way out there. And you know what it really boils down to is leverage. And, like, if I can line three guys up over there and think that I'm running over to – I'm either going to run to the three or I'm going to have my fast guy run away from the three, and your one guy has to pull the flag off of my best player. And if he misses, it's six. I mean, I love it. The kids love it.
I think Matt likes it more than the kids.
I really do. Dude, I went out, I printed out Giants.
Did your son get embarrassed at all?
Not at all.
Nice.
But he hates it when I'm critical of him because I'm not dad, I'm coach. And when he calls me dad, I go, I'm not your dad, I'm your coach. Nice. And he looks at me sideways. Whoa. And I'm just like, yeah. But yeah, I'm not taking it easy on him.
No. Are the grandparents coming out to watch?
They will be there.
Right.
What's funny is, and then we'll get on the Friday. So Al Saunders was drawing out route combinations. And I was walking by his office, you know, because of the reconfiguration, because of the renovation, to go see Kevin Griffin. And I saw him drawing route combination. I go, you know what? I'd be remiss if I didn't show you what my route combination. So I pulled out the Giants playbook, and I start tabbing through. And he immediately starts going with me. He's like, do you have the count? He starts, and I go, is it? He goes, it's 7-on-7? He's like, how wide's the field? He starts asking me questions. And then, so I'm showing, he's like, are you doing this? Are you doing that? I'm like, I've already got that, coach. Come on. Like, I play in the league. And he's like, where's this at? And I go, Rocky River, Force. He's like, because I'm living at Crocker Park in Westlake. He goes, maybe one Saturday I'll just pop by and see your son's game. So I might have Al Saunders, an
helping
NFL
out.
Legend, you know, come watch the Giants hopefully win a football game. And don't embarrass myself.
You've inspired me to step up my game leading a co-ed kickball team. I think I'm going to bring in some more intensity.
Yes,
to the field, and we'll be ready Monday night.
I played co-ed kickball 1 year. I was never sober for any of it, and we were god awful.
Is this indoor or outdoor?
Outdoor.
Indoor.
We were outdoor.
Mine's indoor.
Now,
It was horrific.
Do people bite it?
Oh yes.
Like, I mean, rounding the bases,
yes.
And cleats kind of fly out from under them,
yep.
And bite it while they're.
Oh yeah, because okay. There are people that aren't even wearing cleats
or trying to field the ball,
yes.
And bite it. Okay. Trying to go too hard in a kickball game.
Indoor is a game of strategy too, because you
is.
Can't just kick the ball really hard. It's going to bounce off the wall and they're going to catch
placement,
it.
Right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I need to dig deep.
We played outdoors.
Coach Wilhelm,
the
out
wind.
Here.
Figure out which way the wind's blowing. How can I get it to arc down the line? Yeah. Fair ball.
You kick it foul and it blows in fair.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha.
All right. Time for the Friday forecast. We bring in our esteemed producer. Welcome back, Mr. Dave DiNatale.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, thank you, thank you. All right. Let's kick it off with
number one.
All right. Question one for you guys. What team do you fear the most leapfrogging ahead of the Browns and grabbing the first overall pick?
Gribble?
If there's one team, based on what we've seen in pre-draft visits, it would be the Philadelphia Eagles. But even then, I think they've invested a lot of money in that quarterback position. I think this is a lot of posturing on their part.
I will go with the team that many people have taking the other quarterback other than the Cleveland Browns. So if we went Goff, they take Wentz. We take Wentz, they take Goff. And it would be, and it's very unlikely because of the amount of money they're going to shell out to Colin Kaepernick, it would be the San Francisco 49ers. But that's it. And I don't think there's a dark horse out there.
I think there is.
Ooh.
I think Jerry World. I wouldn't be
surprised. What about the New York Jets?
Jerry World just comes out of nowhere and says, you know what? We get the one player we need. We're going to be good for the next 3 years, and our draft picks aren't going to matter anyways.
Another team to consider, the Los Angeles Rams, who with all the players on their defense, they could be a quarterback away from being a playoff team. But they, with their picking, they're going to have to pay a lot.
I was going
to
say
they'd
that.
Have to give up their 14th pick.
Yep.
So the further down you are, the more you got to pay.
Next.
Number two.
All right, guys. Earlier on the show, you had Eric Hansen on, the Notre Dame beat writer. Interestingly enough, Jalen Smith, who, as we mentioned, going back to the Fiesta Bowl, had that devastating knee injury. He's now squatting 400-plus pounds. He's leg-pressing over 600 pounds, so he's trying to make a fast recovery. On the Friday forecast, I'm wondering, will he go higher than, let's say, the fifth round of the draft?
I'm going to say yes, because I think I was thinking he was going to ask which round he would go in. I would guess earliest he's going to go his fourth round.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can give me that answer, Chris.
Yeah, day three is where people start to maybe get a little, not
Projects.
Crazy, but you start being a little loose with what you're taking.
I would say yes, but the fact that he's squatting 400 pounds and leg pressing 600 pounds, this is a guy that got hurt in a football game without contact and literally tripped over his own feet and blew out his knee, okay, and has nerve damage. So I'm going to go with Gribble and say he goes in front of the fifth round, but just slightly, because that third day, you're just in your wheelhouse enough to take a risk.
I'm going to say yes, and I'm going to throw in a secondary question off of Dino's. Who goes first, Cardale Jones or Jalen Smith?
Cardale Jones.
Yeah, I'd have to agree.
Greasy.
There's a team I could see Cardale Jones going late second on a stretch to a good football team, or being a solid third-round pick.
The popular team I keep seeing with him is the Arizona Cardinals.
Bruce Arians.
Bruce Arians.
That makes a ton of sense.
It would make sense, but when do you pull the trigger on that? The Patriots, a good team, pulled the trigger pretty early on Jimmy Garoppolo in the second round. So I could see that happen.
Next.
Number three.
All right, guys. We know what's happening in Los Angeles. We go to the NBA. You know, D'Angelo Russell recording conversations with Nick Young.
How crazy is that?
Isn't that nuts? Okay, so I'm asking you guys on the Friday forecast, should Lakers get rid of D'Angelo or get rid of Nick Young?
Committed the cardinal sin.
All right, I'll go first. I'll go first. I don't necessarily believe that this is about D'Angelo Russell or Nick Young, because I think it's just a situation with Nick Young. I think what the Lakers debate has to be is you have Russell, you have Julius Randle, you have a strong young nucleus.
You just need to get rid of Kobe.
Do you kind of get rid of Kobe and seven other guys and just, you know, center a team around? Because then you have Russell, the odd man out, dealing with Randle and maybe two other players that are going to be awkward and never trust him again, and a bunch of new guys that are going to have to learn, you know, how to deal with Russell from that point forward. I don't think this is about Russell and Nick Young. So, but that being said, it's easier to get rid of one guy than it is to get rid of a whole team of guys. So it's not about, to answer the question, it's not about Russell and Young. I think the easiest way is to get rid of Russell, but yet you spent the...
He's
like
a rookie.
That's like 3 years from now or next year saying, oh, Wentz can't play because of this, or Goff, and you get rid of your number two pick. It's hard to do with nothing in return.
I saw a tweet about this earlier this week that was kind of funny, but kind of true. It said the Lakers could get rid of Nick Young, Kobe Bryant, and sign no free agents this offseason. It'd be their best offseason ever. So I'm going to lean toward Young if you're going to get rid of someone between the two. I think Russell's shown a lot of promise in limited minutes. He, for some reason, Byron Scott doesn't want to play him on a really bad team. So I would keep Russell. Let this play itself out. Time heals a lot of wounds, even some that are as deep as this one. And you know this is a rebuilding team. You're going to have a lot of new faces in this locker room no matter
Young's
what.
Young's 30 years old. Simple. Gone.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And Russell's 20?
Yeah, I'm going to keep Russell. Russell's averaging 13 points a game. He's having a pretty decent rookie campaign. Keep him and let's grow from there.
Also, his trade value probably isn't great right now.
Yeah. You want it? If you want him, now on a Cavalier team, I would take him.
Oh,
happily,
yeah.
Right about now.
Would you take him, Gibbs?
He'd get checked.
he would get checked.
And finally,
JR. Number four.
Yeah, seriously, JR. All right. Call your shot, guys. We've got the Final Four tomorrow. Game one will feature Villanova and Oklahoma, and then the late game will have Syracuse, North Carolina, right here on KNR.
I'll go first. Oklahoma, Carolina. Carolina in the championship game.
Taking Oklahoma, Carolina, and Oklahoma to win. They've got the best player on the floor, and he's playing out of his mind right now.
I hate North Carolina so much.
I love Carolina.
God, do I hate North Carolina. I'm going to say Oklahoma, Carolina, and I'm going to go Oklahoma strictly because I can't pick North Carolina to win at all.
Why?
I hate them.
Why do you hate them?
I'm a Dukie.
Oh. Why are you a Dukie?
My uncle was the head of sports medicine. Was their team doc for a number of years.
Makes a lot of sense then.
That's – people can't
– I always ask that
question. People try to play the front runner, and I'm like, no. Trust me, man. I've been through a plenty
– I ask very few questions about why people root for who they root for. It's like – you know, when you see someone wearing Michigan stuff in the state of Ohio, why are you wearing Michigan stuff? Or why are you a Steelers fan? You know, and in the state of Ohio, because or especially Northeast Ohio. So I ask those questions, you know, especially the rival. Why are you a Yankees fan? Oh, they won 6 world championships in a row. It's like, no, my dad was a huge Babe Ruth fan who passed it on to my, you know, my great grandfather. Yeah. Da, 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 da. Makes a lot of sense if there's something behind it for me.
So basically you're saying if you have a bad reason for rooting for a great team, make something up.
Yes.
Tell us there's a family connection.
Please do.
Yep.
We'll please do. Otherwise, no
respect.
Yeah. My uncle has moved on. He's now the head of sports medicine at Kentucky. He's Cal's guy. And I'm like, I'm not going to root for you. I grew up rooting for Duke because of you, and I'm not trading it.
Ike Taylor, just on a new topic,
sure.
Since we are done with the Friday forecast, and I know we're going to grab a break. Ike Taylor just came out with his first mock draft. Has the Browns going Jared Goff, Elliott going 4 to the Cowboys, Miles Jack 5, Treadwell 7 to the Niners. This is really odd. That's Jalen Ramsey dropping to 9. Will Fuller going 10 to the Giants, and Joey Bosa dropping out of the top 10 and going to the Bears at 11. I wanted to bring this up simply. Jalen Smith going 19 since he's been a topic of conversation to the Buffalo Bills. Very odd mock draft. You can kind of tell it's a former player doing his first mock draft ever in life.
With that, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, we'll wrap up this week's edition of Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, back here for just a couple brief minutes to wrap up Cleveland Browns Daily. Thanks to everybody for calling. Thanks for all the tweeters today and this week. Gribbs, outstanding effort from you, my friend.
Pull me off the bench. I'm ready to go.
Clearly. And a solid job, man. The glue back after
you.
A one-day absence. Glad you're back, man. Glad everything is getting where it needs to be. The Detroit Lions, team president Rod Wood was talking about the Thursday uniforms and happened to drop that all teams that play on Thursday this year are going to wear Color Rush uniforms. That means that sounds like the Browns will have a fourth uniform debuting.
10th,
11th, whatever that means.
They've got 9 combos, right? And Gribble, I mean, and what have you heard about the Color Rush uniforms?
I just know that you would think it's got to be something outside of your normal uniform
Correct.
Combination. I just don't even know what color you go with at this point. of the three that, that you used to go all in?
Is there a dingier white?
I don't know.
It's like, but I was reading out, everyone plays on Thursday. Yeah,
everyone's going to have a Color Rush uniform, it sounds like. All right, time to wrap up for us. Thanks to Eric Hansen for his time today. Thank you to Andrew Gribble. Thank you to Matt Wilhelm.
You got it.
Hope everybody has a fantastic weekend. I'm Jason Gibbs. Thanks to Dave DiNatale for all his hard work behind the scenes. The Golden Boys are up next, and you're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.